You might wonder if there's life on other planets, how many undiscovered species there are out there, or how black holes actually work. Or you might wonder what would happen if a person jumped into a pool filled with jellyfish. Or you could, how you could lose weight not through diet or exercise, but by being lazy enough to try to shave down the weight of the Earth's mass or relocating it somewhere else in our universe. You know, you're not going to learn the answers to those kind of questions in science class, but our next guest will help you out. We're looking at all the weird what-ifs and forgetting all those boring, normal science questions. Who cares how far Jupiter is or what it's made of? But what if Jupiter shrunk down to the size of a house and lived across the street from you here on Earth? Now, it won't happen, but, you know, what if? We want to hear what you think today at 1-800-642-1234. What are your weirdest science questions? And having read the book now from our guest, there are no questions too weird. No need to be practical here. Our guest can answer real science questions too. So join us at any point of the conversation, 1-800-642-1234. That number again, 800-642-1234, or email anytime, ideas@WPR.org. Randall Monroe is a former NASA roboticist who writes the webcomic XKCD. His new book is What If 2, Additional Serious Scientific Answers to Absurd Hypothetical Questions. Randall, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Now, just starting, jumping off from the introduction of your new book, the sequel, What If 2, you talk about how you love absurd scientific questions so much. Why?
Well, I always feel anxious about not knowing stuff. You know, anyone who's been in academia anytime knows that, like, when you're supposed to, when you've learned a bunch of stuff, you're supposed to know it all. And then when you encounter something you don't know the answer to, you're like, oh, I better back away from this quickly before someone catches me and realizes that I don't know this. But I like these ridiculous questions because, like, no one knows them going into it. We're all coming in kind of confused. And then you can spend a while trying to figure them out and apply some of those same science tools to these ridiculous questions as you would to serious ones, and find out the answers. Like, science doesn't care if a question is ridiculous or not. The tools will help you answer it either way.
And those tools give you the right and wrong of it all too, right? I mean, there's room to move in here, but math is pretty solid.
Yeah, questions have answers, even when they're ridiculous. Like, there's all kinds of unanswerable questions you could spend forever, you know, debating, like, how many angels can dance on the head of a pin, or whether a hot dog is a sandwich. But then there's questions where, you know, like, if you did this, what would really happen? There is some real answer out there, even if you can't go and test it, at least not very easily or safely. You know, you can know what would happen.
Randall Monroe, do you have a favorite rhetorical scientific question, or are they like children and you would refuse to pick your top?
Oh, every time I go through, I feel like there's a different one that's my favorite. One of my favorites is definitely, there was a little girl, Amelia, age 5, who asked what would happen if you filled the solar system with soup. So the soup went all the way out to Jupiter.
Leave it to a 5-year-old to come up with this idea. You know,
I know. I love the questions from little kids because they're not trying to show off, you know, the cool science concepts they know. They just, like, think, here's something I'm wondering about. And then they ask it. And often it takes you in a really weird and complicated directions.
Yes, this former NASA roboticist goes to crunch the numbers and finds that a solar system that is filled with soup all the way out to Jupiter would quickly weigh itself down.
Yeah, that much soup in one place would be enough gravity that everything would be pulled in, even light. So you'd just create a giant black hole, and anyone unlucky enough to be in or near the solar system would be slurped down into the soup as it formed a singularity.
So we would be here on Earth, that would be within the solar system that is now filled with soup all the way out to Jupiter. What would happen to us?
Well, you know, the thing that really surprised me about this is it's easy to, you know, the calculation to figure out that it would create a black hole is pretty straightforward. But then I started wondering, you know, well, but what would actually happen if you were looking around from inside it? You know, because it turns out, you know, you'd think, oh, you're inside a black hole. Surely, you know, you'd die instantly from something.
Be torn apart or?
But strangely, you wouldn't. This black hole is so large that you, with a small black hole, you know, one part of you would be pulled harder than the other part of you, and the forces would pull you apart. The actual scientific term for it is you would be spaghettified, stretched out like a strand of spaghetti. But in Amelia's black hole, the soup black hole, you would, it's so big compared to a person that you could actually, like, for a little bit, float around in the soup and feel like nothing was wrong, even as you accelerated in a plunge toward the center. And it would only be after a few minutes that the soup would start to compress around you and the pressure would rise. And then you would probably want to click the escape button and leave that scenario pretty quick.
Well, Randall Monroe, and forgive me for asking, but I'm sure 5-year-old Amelia would like to know, does it matter what kind of soup?
I think it really doesn't. I think that no matter what kind of soup you start with, I guess it's going to be full of like planets floating around, right? So I think it's at that point, planet soup.
Planet soup. There you go. Randall Monroe.
Yeah, they're like little croutons.
Are those the moons in the asteroid belt?
Yeah. They're like, those are the garnish. And then you've got, you know, Pluto falling in at the top. That's like the little sprig that they add to it just before they bring it to your table.
This would be an amazing science class to take where you begin. Actually, and it's an exciting math class because you really do crunch the numbers through your new book, What If 2, as you look at these what would be ridiculous questions, but really have scientific solid answers. Now, there are segments of your book that have questions from readers and fans of yours that really have no answer to, and you do address some of those in the book. But also, you have this, and this was featured earlier this week in the New York Times, a question from a fan of yours who wanted to know if the universe stopped expanding and we were to take a drive out to the edge of it, how long it would take us to get there.
Yeah. And I love this question because, you know, you got to assume some unrealistic things. You got to assume, okay, imagine that there's a road with gravity that you could drive along, and that you aren't gonna, you know, that you have like an infinite lifespan because it would take you, you know, a gigantic number of years. Like, five times 10 to the 17th, you know, one of those numbers with a lot of zeros in the end, that many years to reach it, which is a lot longer than the current age of the universe. But then I also got to have fun calculating things like, well, you know, how long does it take the average person to have a car accident when they're driving? And then work out like how far could you really get in your car before statistically you'd probably have like, you know, swerved off the road and I guess fallen into space. And I figured out you probably wouldn't be able to even reach Jupiter
before you'd get
unless you've got
accident.
A really good cruise control.
Randall Monroe, our guest, former NASA roboticist. He is the cartoonist behind the webcomic XKCD and the author of the new book, What If 2? Additional serious scientific answers to absurd hypothetical questions like, if you were driving to the edge of the universe, how long would that take you? And how many accidents would you get in before you got there? Where do these questions come from, Randall?
Well, I draw comics about a lot of, you know, science and math topics that I'm interested in. And people started sending me questions where they wanted me to settle arguments they were having with their friends, you know, like about Superman or sci-fi physics or space or just, you know, hypotheticals. And they were always like, well, these seemed like too silly a question to send to a real scientist. Who's, you know, they're probably busy. But we figured we were like, oh, the guy who does the cartoons, he seems like a good person to reach out to.
Send it to the comic book guy. This. Yeah, Randall Monroe, yeah, our so, guest. Go on.
Yeah, and I always and I loved doing it because as soon as I see the question, I'm curious about the answer too. And then I would, you know, find out, oh, before I knew it, 6 hours had passed and I had been doing all this like math. I'm like, oh, now I've got to know. I'm not going to rest until I figure it out.
If you took all the bananas in the world and all the churches in the world, would all the bananas fit in all the churches? That's actually in our guest book, What If 2? Additional Serious Scientific Answers to Absurd Hypothetical Questions. But perhaps these absurd hypothetical questions offer us an opportunity to get some perspective about where we are and what we're all doing here. And perhaps you have some absurd hypothetical questions of your own that science may be able to tackle. Join us, 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We want to know all your rhetorical science questions, all the questions you think probably don't have an answer. We've got the guy who might be able to help answer it with us today, Randall Monroe, our guest. Questions that ignore the boundaries of reality? Those are welcome to 1-800-642-1234 or email us at any time, ideas@WPR.org. Our conversation with Randall continues coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and right now we're picking up the conversation with XKCD creator Randall Monroe about his new book, What If 2, Additional Serious Scientific Answers to Absurd Hypothetical Questions. And we have them coming in, but we want to hear from you as well at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Randall Monroe, before we get to our callers' questions, a follow-up on this strange question for reasons I don't understand. Someone wanted to know if all the bananas in the world would fit into all the churches in the world. Will they?
Well, it's hard to, you know, you can't be completely certain, but pretty sure, yes.
Yeah,
this is a tricky question to estimate because, you know, there's no big index of all of the churches or, you know, houses of worship in the world. Or all the bananas for that matter. But you can come up with some pretty good estimates. You can figure out, like, what's the probability that the average person in the world attends some kind of weekly religious service in a building that you could count as a church. And then figure out how many, you know, how many bananas are produced per person per year, and how many of those bananas exist at any one time, and figure out that probably there is more sort of total volume devoted to church space than there is to bananas. Or maybe there's someone out there who's, you know, growing and eating billions of bananas every week, and they're throwing the average off. But from the, you know, the numbers that we can estimate from the data that's out there about church attendance and about banana consumption, it looks like the bananas would fit pretty easily. They'd probably only fill the church up to your ankles.
Science. Is there anything it can't do? Well, let's go to your questions now and find out the hard way at 1-800-642-1234. And we'll begin with Aaron from La Crosse. Aaron, you're on the air with Randall Monroe.
Hey, Randall. This has been bugging me since high school. So, you know how if you take a bottle of water, you put it in the freezer, and after roughly an hour or so, it's still water, but you take it out of the freezer and you just crack the cap and it freezes down and turns into ice immediately, kind of just flows down, and the pressure was keeping the ice from becoming water. Is it possible to create a container that will not allow the ice to expand and remain water or not?
Aaron, dang. Randall Monroe, if you put water in a container that will not let the water expand, will it freeze or will it stay a liquid?
Yeah, you can... Yes, you can. And actually, you have to have just the right setup and the right balance for that to work. I think I've never pulled that off myself and had the ice, you know, freeze in front of my eyes like that. You can do a similar thing if you have it cooled, but it's really distilled water with no impurities in it. But one of if you compress water, you can actually get it to enter a bunch of new phases. The ice will form different and more compact crystalline structures. And so you can end up with water that's, you know, even at room temperature will enter interesting ice phases. Like there's, you know, our regular ice is like ice one. And then there's ice two, three, four, that are only attainable at really high pressures. If you really, hold the water in a container and keep it, keep the pressure high. And those forms of ice, there's actually still active research into if you have just high enough pressures that are hard to get to in a lab, what forms the water molecules will gather together in. It's really cool.
Aaron, does that help answer your age old question?
Yeah, that helps some. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Turn now to Alex, who's in Janesville. Alex, you're on Central Time with Randall Monroe.
Hi. So I heard that there's this.
Oh, no. How do we lose
you?
Okay, I've got Alex's question here, and I apologize, Alex, for losing you, but it's a simple one that may be very complicated to get to the bottom of. Randall Monroe, are there more doors or more wheels in the world?
Okay, so this is a thing from I think, you know, it's going around on TikTok and where people debate this this question. It's really popular. And one of the reasons that I think it's sort of unanswerable is, like a lot of questions, it kind of comes down to like arguing over what fits into a category, like doors. Oh. So like you might say, okay, well, you know, I can think of more, you know, I have a car, it has four wheels, my house has seven doors, you know, that, okay, maybe there are more more doors than wheels. But then you think, well, wait, what counts as a wheel? What about like if you have a bearing that's full of little ball bearings that all roll around between the two surfaces? Do those count as wheels? If so, there's a lot of those. And what about, you know, the digital gates in computer circuits, the logic gates? Are those doors? Maybe if you count those as doors, there are more doors. And I think the longer I, you know, the older I get, the more I feel like sometimes when you get to the point of arguing over whether or not a word, you know, a common word, whether it apply, whether, you know, exactly what the definition of it is, like it's sometimes an argument that you're better off stepping away from. Sort of like, you know, the people who argue over whether a hot dog is really a sandwich or not. At some point you're like, well, you know, we all agree on what a hot dog looks like, what it's made of, you know, whether it's a sandwich or not isn't as important as, you know, what toppings you're going to put on it. And so I feel like the doors and windows question sort of ends up being one of those if you do a deep enough dive into it.
Yeah, it depends on what you consider a door. And I've even got, you know, as when we talk about wheels, they want to count wheels of cheese too, but it's a wheel, right?
Yeah, yeah. And that's, and you know, it's good to know what other people mean when they use words. So it's not like, you know, being precise about terminology isn't important sometimes, but sometimes arguing about definitions, I think there's just, it doesn't get, you know, there's no end
science
to it.
It's just theory. Yeah. Randall Monroe is the author of What If 2, Additional Serious Scientific Answers to Absurd Hypothetical Questions. And there are hundreds of them in there. And part of a rule of thumb that you have is that if physicists are excited about something, that Randall Monroe should probably stay away from it. Why is that?
Well, you know, physicists are interested in like measuring attributes of the universe. You know, we measure how, like, people like to measure how fast things are going, what the temperatures are they hot, cold, you know, high pressure, low pressure. And the thing about all these different variables is if you take any one of them and move it out to an extreme, that can help you explore, you know, how that thing behaves. Like, how does the water behave if you increase the pressure or, you know, lower the temperature down to absolute zero? But the thing you'll notice about a lot of those different qualities you can measure is that if you take them out to one of those extremes or the other, it's often not great for the survival of humans. You know, we like things to be at a certain room temperature and a certain pressure. And, you know, we don't like going near the speed of light. And if you take any variable and change its value to be extreme in one direction or another, the chances are pretty good that it's going to get really dangerous for any people who are nearby. So good rule of thumb is when physicists are really interested in something, definitely keep your distance, maybe put on some safety goggles.
Here's what I liked from your book, Randall, and that was a question from someone who wanted to lose 20 pounds but didn't want to exercise and wasn't interested in eating right. Would rather move Earth itself or change Earth's mass in order to lose 20 pounds, and how would they have to go about doing that?
Yeah, we, you know, the reason we have weight, the reason we're pulled downward is because of Earth's gravity. And the more Earth there is, the stronger the gravity is. So it stands to reason if you removed some of the Earth, maybe what will be left behind, you know, should pull you down less hard. And so you would have weigh less, even though your mass wouldn't change. The amount of material you're made of doesn't change, but the amount that you're being pulled down by gravity does. But the sort of surprising thing about this question is it turns out if you removed the top, you know, layer of Earth, the top, you know, couple of miles of Earth's surface, I mean, for one thing, you'd probably cause a lot of volcanoes to all erupt at once. But if, you know, assuming you can survive that, you would actually get heavier.
What?
And the reason is the Earth isn't a uniform sphere. The core of the Earth, you know, we've got the like nickel iron core and then the fluid outer core, that those are much denser. So the Earth's mass is concentrated at the center. So if you remove the outer layers, you're removing some lightweight outer layers, but you're moving closer to that really dense core. And so it turns out moving closer to the dense core actually more than cancels out the removed mass from removing the outer layer, and you get heavier.
So I'm,
and it's only when you remove about like half of the Earth's
I feel like I'm putting on 20 pounds here and not losing 20 pounds. So, yeah, how much of the Earth would I have to lose, or where would we have to move it in order to just drop 20 pounds the easy way?
Well, you'd have to take away maybe about half the Earth's radius, and which is I think a majority of its mass at that point, before your weight started dropping back down, you know, as you start to remove the heavy core, and then you really did cut down on the gravity you're feeling. But an interesting thing about gravity is, if you're inside a sphere of material, it doesn't exert any gravitational pull on you. So you don't actually have to remove all the Earth's mass. You just have to dig a tunnel and go down under it. And so if you dig the tunnel halfway to the core of the Earth, that's also impossible, you know, from a practical point of view, but it's a little less impossible than actually removing all the Earth's mass. You could just remove a tube of it.
So it may be easier to exercise and eat right to lose 20 pounds. Randall, are there scientific questions that you really wish you knew the answers to, whether they were absurd or not?
Oh, sure. I got all kinds of questions. You know, there's, there's all kinds of cool discoveries we're trying to make. People looking, I would love to get a better picture of all these exoplanets people keep discovering. You know, I want to see what they look like. And it's a really hard technical challenge to get, images of them. But maybe in, a couple decades, we're going to have at least a blurry glimpse of what's going on their surfaces. But then there's also a lot of questions much closer to home that are surprisingly unsolved. Like, you know, when you rub your when you rub a balloon on your hair and your hair sticks up, mm-hmm. If you ask why that happens, like you can say, well, it's because electrons move from your hair to the balloon. And so the balloon gets a negative charge and your hair gets a positive charge. But we don't actually know why the electrons move that way. Like it's this phenomenon, it's called triboelectric charging. And it's the subject of there've been a bunch of papers just in the last year trying to come up with a theory of why electrons jump from one surface to another and why they don't jump in the other direction.
Triboelectric charging. Randall Monroe, we'll have to look more into that. And thank you so much for joining us this afternoon with some great answers to some very strange questions.
Oh, thank you so much. This was a lot of fun.
You bet. Randall Monroe, former NASA roboticist who writes the webcomic XKCD, talking to us about his new book, What If 2? Additional serious scientific answers to absurd hypothetical questions. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network.